Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and we're going on a tour of the stars and planets you'll see overhead on February evenings and mornings. As February opens, be sure to head outside at least one day before sunrise. You'll be rewarded with a showcase of bright stars and, get this, all five planets that are visible to the unaided eye. First, find a spot with a clear view towards southeast. Then locate Venus, which is bright but low down near the southeastern horizon. Then look not far to its lower left to spot the planet Mercury. This little planet is in the midst of a nice appearance before dawn, and it's got quite an audience. Sweep your view toward upper right from Mercury and Venus to spot Saturn, Mars, and Jupiter. This kind of five-planet gathering hasn't happened in more than a decade. And if it's clear on the morning of February 6th, look for a thin crescent moon parked just above Venus and Mercury. That should be a really pretty combination. Now, since Mercury is the fastest moving planet, orbiting the Sun in just 88 days, it whips from one side of the Sun to the other very quickly. So consequently, its days in the morning sky are numbered. Even though it's quite bright, as the month continues, it'll slide a little lower and closer to the horizon. You'll probably lose sight of it by about February 20th. Okay, let's shift the goings-on to the evening sky. Be sure to bundle up warmly, don't forget your head and feet, plan to stay out for at least a half an hour to give your eyes a chance to adapt to the darkness. In fact, even after 10 minutes, you'll see far more stars than when you first step outside. February is often the coldest month of the year for us northerners, but the sun is telling a different story. The December solstice came and went more than a month ago, and you can already notice that the days are getting longer, with earlier sunrises and later sunsets. The celestial geometry is changing too, as the sun is starting to slide farther north in the sky. In fact, during February, the sun races northward among the stars by about 1 degree every 3 days. Heck, in no time at all, we'll be on the threshold of spring. With all that planetary action going on in the morning sky, for now there are no planets visible by eye after sunset. Instead, the stars of winter are in control of the nighttime firmament. Note where the sun sets, and once twilight starts to envelop you, wheel around to the left until you're looking in nearly the opposite direction. The night sky's most dazzling star is Sirius, down near the southeastern horizon in early evening. Also known as the Dog Star, Sirius appears so bright partly because it is bright, outshining the sun by 25 times, and partly because it's relatively close by, only 8.5 light years away. Above Sirius is the distinctive pattern of Orion the Hunter, the quintessential constellation of winter, or of summer, I suppose, if you live in Australia. Orion is unmistakable, even if you suffer from lots of light pollution. With three stars in a tight diagonal row marking his belt, surrounded by a tall, boxy quartet of bright stars to frame his torso. To the belt's upper left is the red supergiant star Betelgeuse, which marks Orion's left shoulder. Now, you'd never guess it because it's 428 light-years away, but Betelgeuse is one of the biggest stars known. If you swapped it for our sun, its surface would be somewhere between Mars and Jupiter, and Earth digested into star stuff. To the upper right of Betelgeuse, by about twice the width of your fist held at arm's length, is another red giant star. That's Aldebaran, the angry eye of the bull, Taurus. Look closely. Both of these beacons have a reddish tinge that sets them apart subtly from the stars around them. As you look around this part of the sky, you'll notice a bunch of bright stars. Skygazers often trace out an enormous six-sided pattern called the winter hexagon that connects them all. To find it, imagine that Betelgeuse is in the middle of the hexagon. To its lower right, on the other side of Orion's belt, is icy white Rigel, marking the hunter's left foot. From there, slide your gaze to the lower left by about three fists until you reach Sirius. Continue clockwise around the hexagon, heading upper left by about three fists to reach the star Procyon. Now glide to the upper left again until you reach Pollux and above it, Castor. These are the twins of Gemini. Look to the upper right of the twins, almost overhead, to find Capella in the constellation Auriga. From there, it's a three-fist hop down to Aldebaran, and another three-fist hop brings you back to Rigel. There you have it, the winter hexagon. Rigel, Sirius, Procyon, Pollux, Capella, and Aldebaran, with Betelgeuse anchoring its middle. Like Sirius, most of these sparklers are relatively close by, though some of the bright stars of Orion are relatively far away, 800 light-years or more. They're all in this part of the sky because we're looking along the disk of the Milky Way, outward rather than toward its center, and the stars are just more numerous and generally closer to us in that direction. Now, for a little contrast, shift your gaze to the right of Orion. Even if you don't have a lot of light pollution, you'll see that there's not much there. This wide expanse of the sky, stretching all the way over to the Great Square of Pegasus over in the west, is occupied by three big but dim constellations that all involve water. The first, nearest Orion, is Eridanus, representing an ancient mythical river. It begins at the foot of Orion, near Rigel, and meanders sideways and downward for quite a distance. Its brightest star, Acherinar, is well below the horizon for most northern observers. To the river's right is Cetus, the ancient sea monster who attacked Princess Andromeda as she lay chained to a rock. The brightest star in Cetus is Diphda, glowing low in the southwest right now. The third constellation is one you probably know, at least by name, and that's Pisces. These celestial fish are a string of faint stars in a big V-shape on its right side that parallels the left half of the Great Square. You might be able to make out a pentagon of faint stars below the square, known as the circlet. This marks one end of Pisces. Why so many water constellations down in the southern sky? Apparently, this stems from ancient Mesopotamians and their sacred water god, Enki, who inhabited the southern part of the sky. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Next month, I'll introduce you to twin brothers who've really made a name for themselves. Until then, I wish you clear skies.